Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil. Corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud. Marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud. Gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblog, goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you. Is it a goodly morning, though? There's a lot going on in this world. I stayed up last night watching people shout at each other in America. Very exciting.
Yeah. Well, let's do that then. Let's just like go straight into US politics and keep everybody really happy. I mean,
that's what they want. They want me to wade in. No, I don't have an opinion. I just thought it was good television.
It was good television, right.
Yeah.
What,
yeah.
Like Cheers or something like that?
Very light Cheers. Very light. I think it's a remake. I think that's what it is.
Oh, dear. No, I just can't. I can't even, like, the idea of starting to talk about that is just...
It's too big.
It's too big. We don't have enough time. And
wherewithal.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. But anyway, if I'm tired this morning, that's why. Because, like how big boxing match, you stay up to watch that from America.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
basically that. I had, popcorn and... But anyway, I've been on holiday as well.
You have been on holiday in Morocco. How was Morocco, land of Marouan Chamakh and some camels? I saw that you made friends with a camel.
I'm more than made friends with him.
Oh,
sorry,
really?
that sounds bad. No, what I mean is I went on a...
You and the camel are now betrothed.
That's it, yeah. I've returned hand in hoof with a camel. I went on a camel ride, two-hour trek along the beach. Extraordinary. Have you ever ridden a camel?
I have not ever ridden a camel, no.
I mean, it's not comfortable.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Was it a one-humper or a two?
One hump. I'm not sure actually what delineates. Are the different parts of the world have different camels? I don't know.
I don't really know. But where do you sit? Do you sit, like, on top of the hump?
You sit, yeah, but a little bit further forward, so sort of on the side of the hump nearest the camel's head, I believe.
Right.
But you're on a little, harness type thing that they put on it. I mean, it's not little at all, it's a pretty big seat they plonk on its back.
So you're always sort of sitting as if you're going to slide down his hump and off his head.
Slightly.
Right.
Exciting. The worst part is when they stand up and sit down, that's... very, very dicey. But it's just incredibly uncomfortable. Basically, they bump up and down. It's, if you've ridden a horse, it's relatively stable. I mean, you have a little, motion as you gallop along. But for the most part, you're kind of level. It's like being on a roller coaster riding a camel.
Yeah.
I don't know why people were doing it.
Well, probably because they're the only things that they can ride. Do they have horses?
Out into the desert. They do have horses.
Of course
horses
they do, yeah.
Don't cope as well in, in the desert.
So you were 2 hours on the back of a camel. What was his name?
His name was Lawrence of Arabia.
No way.
I know. Well, I don't think that was his given name.
No.
I don't think that's what his parent camels called him.
No.
But it's what Mustafa, the guide, called him.
The two
camels we rode were called Timbuktu and Lawrence of Arabia.
Right. Well,
he was insistent, Mustafa, that I give him a good TripAdvisor review. TripAdvisor has huge influence in Morocco. It seems to
really
define their entire industry. Yeah, it's like, everywhere you go, they say, remember us on TripAdvisor when you leave. And they put their hand over their heart, which is, a sign of deep sincerity in Morocco. So it's like you have to Yes, you'll review them on TripAdvisor. I've not yet done that. But
right.
I've plugged him on the podcast, so if you're in Essaouira, Mustafa's your man for an uncomfortable camel ride.
Are there competing, like, different camel bosses, jockeys?
You wouldn't believe it, the way they're touting for this. Honestly, it makes the transfer window look like, you know, a walk in the park. We had a real problem because accidentally we promised Abdul that we would go with him on the camel ride. Abdul approached us and said, do you want a camel ride? We were like, oh, not sure. And it was early in our stay. We weren't really au fait with the haggling etiquette.
Right.
We ended up sort of, to get rid of him, being like, okay, Abdul, we'll come for a camel ride with you. Then for the next few days, every time we left our hotel, Abdul was lurking outside the door. being like, you know, camel ride? And we were like, oh, we're not sure. And he only knew about four phrases of English, one of which was, maybe tomorrow.
Like the littlest hobo.
Basically, yeah. And in the end, we were walking along the beach when we were approached by Mustafa. Now, we had heard tell of Mustafa from his TripAdvisor, you know, when we were looking at things in Morocco. He's number two in the whole resort.
Oh, wow. So, like, yeah. He's got plenty of good reviews on TripAdvisor.
He's like the king of TripAdvisor. And we were like, oh, we've met Abdul now, and he's really nice. And we explained our situation to Mustafa. We explained to him, look, we'd love to go with you. We know all about your TripAdvisor success. But we've promised ourselves to Abdul. And he was like, his head fell, and he was like,
not fucking Abdul, how could you?
But no, to be fair, his words were, that means nothing to me. I have many Abduls. And I was like, to be fair, in our short time here, so do we. But he said, if you've promised him, that's a big deal. He said, can't just not go with him if you've promised him. In Morocco, promises everything. If you don't go with Abdul, if you want to go with me, you'll have to pay Abdul something, because otherwise you've completely broken your promise, and that will reflect badly on us all. So we had this problem where we were like, okay, what are we going to do? We wanted to go with Mustafa, and we booked to go with him. But
were his camels better? I mean, is it like going to a hire car place and they give you the option of a Mini or an Audi? Was that the kind of shit?
Slightly. I mean, I had seen Abdul's camels on the beach, and they weren't looking the healthiest, I'll be honest.
Right.
He had an albino camel called Sebastian, who had these lovely blue eyes. I mean, his gait was awkward. I didn't think he'd be able to carry me, to be honest.
Right.
Especially after a holiday of food. So we decided to go to Mustafa. The advantage of Mustafa, if you want to go with him, he's brilliant English, very friendly, lovely smile, little gap in his teeth, which is very charming. He provides you with the traditional, anyone who's seen my Instagram will know, the traditional, you know, desert dress. I forget exactly what it is that it's called. You know, that you get a little headdress and yeah. Things like that. Which is, you know, maybe a little bit dubious, me popping that on, sitting on a camel, riding along. But I was up for it. And he also takes you to the Jimi Hendrix Cafe. Because in the 60s, Jimi Hendrix visited a cafe in a little village on the coast of Morocco. And since then, it's kind of become a shrine to him. So you get to visit that on Mustafa's tour. So anyway, that was enough to convince us.
The excitement of that.
I mean, it's, you literally sit there and there's a picture of Jimi Hendrix. It's incredible. So we decided to go with Mustafa to betray Abdul's trust. And we were told, look, if we bump into Abdul, in order to sort of assuage arguments, you'll have to slip him a little something. To be fair, the little something was nearly as much as Abdul was going to charge us for the camel ride. So, you know, but in British pounds, not that much. But anyway, we went along on the camel ride, no sign of Abdul. But we finished with Mustafa, and he was like, look, I know we didn't see Abdul, but try and look for him. Try and give him some money because, you know, you did break your promise. I don't want any problem at all.
Don't want anybody. He doesn't want Abdul, like, lurking around outside his house. Because if Abdul was prepared to lurk outside a hotel for two tourists who are going to be there for a week, I mean, what would he do to Mustafa?
Genuinely, you couldn't go anywhere without meeting Abdul. And so we thought that was the end of it. And then a couple of days later, we were sat on the beach watching the sunset. Along comes Mustafa with another party of camel riders. And he waves at us, hello, my friends, hello. And then at the back of the line of camels we see walking alongside the camels, leading it, Rain, is Abdul.
What? What's going on here?
It was like an end-of-season cliffhanger. So, and then and Abdul just went, hello, James, like that. He remembered my name, because obviously he remembers my name, where I live, everything about me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. So I think Mustafa, who'd feigned ignorance of any man called Abdul, I know many Abduls, you know, I can't promise you, are they in cahoots? Is it his plan that he sends Abdul... and you know, you commit to him, but then he swoops in, the knight in shining armour, saving you from Abdul. He gets you to give a bit of extra money to Abdul to sort of buy him off, but that money gets back to him as well. They're working together.
Oh, my God.
It's an elaborate scheme.
It really is. Holy shit. I mean, I'd put that on the trip advisor, although maybe not.
I don't want Abdul turning up at my house.
No, he'd be outside your door tomorrow morning. You can open the door to get the milk, and there's Abdul. Yeah.
Incredible, eh?
That's just bananas.
It was a real head fuck, to be honest with you. But yeah, other than that, Morocco was great.
Right.
It's a lovely country. You can't get a drink many places.
That's right.
For religious reasons, of course.
Of course.
But it's very relaxing.
Okay, well, but that's what you needed. Maybe you didn't need to be hungover every morning. I know certainly that when I returned from New York the other week, having been out, yes, where you can get a drink everywhere at any
almost
time
every
of the
place.
At any time of the day or morning or whatever it is, I certainly needed a few days to recover and would have liked a holiday, not necessarily in Morocco or with camels, but, you know, just to have those few days to relax. So maybe that was a good thing. Come back and be recharged, refreshed, ready for
surprise.
All the stuff. Go on, what's the real surprise? Holy shit.
I didn't fall off a camel.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah. Yeah,
incredible.
True.
Surely you would expect me to be trampled underfoot.
Or bitten. I would have thought the Sebastian, the albino camel, would have bitten you or something.
Yes. Her name's Squillachi. Yeah, they're a strange beast, to be honest with you. They all have a slightly lobotomized energy to them, you know. It's kind of, they trudge along. I can't tell if they're enjoying carrying people or not. There's no emotion from them whatsoever.
Mm. I would suggest probably not. I mean, all of a sudden, you're a camel, you're born, and then there's loads of weird people sitting on your hump. I think that probably isn't the most enjoyable thing. Now, I don't know what camels like to do. I mean, do they enjoy water sports or frolicking through meadows? I don't know what it is that they like to do or would do if they had the freedom to do whatever it is they wanted. But I would suggest that carrying people around would not be their first choice.
I think you might be right there. I think you might be right. But there you go.
That's
what I was up to.
All right. Well, look, you missed so much here.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Do you want me to fill you in?
Yeah, if you've got time. The show's only an hour long, but I mean, try and fill me in and what's happened in this frantic interlude.
Okay, well, brace yourself. Here is everything that happened. I'm going to count myself in, all right?
Okay.
3, 2, 1. That's pretty much it.
Okay. As I suspected.
It's been quite quiet. There's been a few little things. We thought maybe Hector Bellerin had picked up an injury with the Spanish under-21s. He suffered a very hard tackle from a San Marino under-21 player towards the end of Spain's 3-0 win over San Marino, and he sat out training the next day. But turns out it was just precautionary, and he was back in the saddle, back in training the next day. And maybe Spain under-21s, they could have played yesterday, or maybe they're playing today. I don't know. But that was
so
a little bit
right.
of a scare. He's all right, it seems, yeah? Which is good, because we don't have much in the way of backup. Just at this moment in time. What else happened?
There's been some chat about him, hasn't there, about his contract and what have you.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff going around about Manchester City. And obviously Pep Guardiola, you know, you could understand why he would be looking at his right-back options, because he's got Zabaleta and Bakary Sagna, two good players, but, you know, the wrong side of 30, both of them. And they're going to have to they're going to have to future-proof it a bit. There's some talk that, maybe this is perhaps just part of the machinations of Arsenal or the agent trying to, you know, generate some interest. So Arsenal's offer, if they do offer him a new contract. I actually wrote about it last week, and I think they should certainly offer Hector Bellerin a new contract. We can talk about Alexis and Ozil. There's a little story there as well. But, you know, to show that we can keep someone like Hector, I think he's very happy at Arsenal. He's enjoying his football. But, you know, he's one of the guys who could be the future of this team, or is the future of the team, and we have to show that we're holding it off. So I don't really buy too much into the Manchester City interest. They were interested in him during the summer. Manchester City actually approached Arsenal during the summer, and the story goes, maybe it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but they got a two-word response from Arsenal, and the second word was off. So, you know, Arsenal are in no mind to sell Hector Bellerin to anyone, least of all Manchester City. But, of course, you know, agents will do what they do. He only signed a new deal last year in 2015. Right. So he would have had a nice pay rise, and his stature in the team would have been recognized by the wages that he has on offer. So there's no real rush. You know, it's not like he's running out. So we're in a fairly strong position there, but yeah, I think it's just paper talk, and obviously maybe Manchester City trying to unsettle little Hector. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they're not. You know, they're probably not the club I'm worried about coming for. In fact, of the ones who are out there.
Yeah,
but I think you know, it's although he signed a new deal recently, his rise is pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, he's gone from being a young player who sort of, you know, found his way into the team to now one of the stars, really, and that ought to be reflected in his salary, because he's really important to the way that we play.
Yep. Alex Iwobi scored his first goal for Nigeria, which is good.
I saw it.
Yeah.
Lovely goal.
Yeah, keeper spoiled it a bit, didn't he, getting a touch on it and pushing it in, but, you know, goal is really goal.
Yeah, goal's a goal, and was there talk about his contract as well while I was away? I might have seen a couple of stories. I don't know if he's due another one. But, yeah, good to see him off the market, international level.
Yeah.
In January, will he? Is it AFCON coming up? Did Nigeria qualify?
I don't think they qualified.
Well, that would be great news.
Yeah.
So.
I don't think
I've got a memory of them not qualifying. Yeah. I just don't know if that was... I feel like there have been so many AFCONs recently.
Yeah, there have been a few, all right.
Yeah, so I don't know. So we'll see. I'm Googling,
yeah,
but it'll be AFCON 2017.
Kieran Gibbs got called into the England squad because Ryan Bertrand got injured. So Kieran Gibbs is in the squad for a game against Slovenia, is it? Could be. You should know.
Yes, it is.
It is Slovenia.
He's done well to get into that squad, to be honest, given that he's barely played, really.
Yeah, he has. One start and some substitute appearances, but, you know, over the last 12 to 18 months, he's played very little football, hasn't he? Nacho Monreal as well was called up into the Spanish squad because Jordi Alba got injured, and Monreal started for Spain last night against Albania. But apparently, the call-up came really late. Spain were already on the way, and Monreal had to travel on his own to meet them there. And apparently he had to fly from London to Rome, and then from Rome to Tirana. And then they had to give him a lift. Some guy had to get an Uber from Tirana to the city where the game was being played, 100 kilometres away. Monreal didn't arrive until 2 a.m. on Saturday morning, and then he played on Sunday. So a bit of travelling for Nacho. Hopefully he's not too tired.
Yeah, hopefully not. I mean, he's if I'm right, I think he's not been in the Spain setup, has he, for a while now? So I guess eager to get back involved.
Yeah.
By the way, it seems that Nigeria aren't involved in AFCON 2017.
That's good.
Confusingly, there's a lot of stories suggesting that despite not qualifying, they have made it as a consequence of Egypt being disqualified for two players, Mohamed Elneny, actually, and Mohamed Salah being done for drugs cheating.
What?
But
hang on,
yeah, I know, but having looked at the dates of all these stories, they're all Friday, 1st of April.
Oh, right.
So there was the long period of me sort of sounding a bit distracted. It was me desperately trying to figure out what was going on and why I didn't know about El Neni's drugs ban.
Right.
Which would certainly explain his remarable energy levels.
Yeah. But he's hopped up on goofballs the whole time.
It seems Nigeria will not be there, but I guess Egypt will.
Well, that's good for Arsenal, but not good for Nigeria. So any Nigerian listeners, sorry. That you're not there, but it's good for us because obviously Alex Iwobi is becoming an integral part of the team. So
very important. Well, by the way, we touched on England there, Kieran Gibbs. I'm not sure you and I have spoken in any detail at all about what happened to the England manager, your friend and mine, Sam Allardyce.
Sam Allardyce. It's all a bit of a damp squib, isn't it? This stuff that came out, you know, the Telegraph.
Have there been any more revelations while I've been away?
I think the assistant manager at Southampton took... He took, like, some Burger King vouchers and the promise of
a Cafe Nero card with 7 stamps.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was all so hugely underwhelming. You know, I guess you can see why they started with Allardyce. Look, it's very difficult to have a lot of sympathy for him because, like, down the years he's been such... an atrocious ogre in all of our lives, but when you look at it, you know he was a bit indiscreet, and I think it was more the embarrassment that he caused that caused him to lose his job rather than doing anything particularly wrong. You know, he was a bit rude about Roy Hodgson, and he said something a bit silly about Prince William or his own Prince Albert. I don't know what it was, but apart from that, I mean. It seems just an extraordinary thing. But look, he's gone to Big Sam's Villa.
Right, yeah, Big Sam's Villa. Mm. Well, it's what a place to be.
He should be the new manager of Aston Villa. I think, you know, that'll work well.
Well, when you first said that, I thought that was what you meant, actually.
No. He's got his own villa in Spain and it's called Big Sam's Villa, yeah.
Yeah, that returned to me. But
What did you make of it? I mean, it wasn't like he was accepting, suitcases full of cash or anything.
No, I think the big problem was that he said it was possible to circumvent rules around,
third party ownership. Yeah, but I don't think even that. Yeah, I mean, it is possible. That's all he was saying. He wasn't saying you can break the rules, but you can get around the rules. You know, there's always a way of making something happen, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know if you watched the full video, but, like, he does say, well, look, obviously, before I take on this position, I need to check with my bosses at the FA. Mm. And then in the second meeting, the undercover journalist suggests a bung, basically, to a manager or a player, and Allardyce... very definitively says, oh, no, you can't even... Well, I'm sat here, you can't give money to a player, you can't give money to a manager. You used to be able to do things like that. It used to happen 30 years ago. It doesn't happen now. Mm. So it was pretty tame, I thought, really. I mean, what was his crime? I guess sort of negotiating to earn himself 400 grand for a sort of slightly meaningless consultant role.
Yeah, it's a bit greedy, and you know, I don't think anybody should be surprised that there's greed and avarice in football, and that, you know, someone like Allardyce will try and take advantage of his position as England manager to earn himself more money. And people say, well, he's on £3 million a year, wasn't that enough for him? And look, you know, all managers do these things, these corporate events, speaking gigs, endorsements, all those kind of things.
We all saw Arsene Wenger do his interview about with a watch company or something. I doubt he did that for free.
No, exactly. And, you know, you would say that Arsene Wenger, you wouldn't have said that he is a man who's motivated hugely by money, right? He's not what it doesn't seem to be. One. I mean, when does he ever spend it? All he does is work and then sit at home and watch football. He's either got, like, the most amazing couch of all time made from, I don't know, camels. Yeah. Unhumpy camels. I don't know what. But, I mean, I just don't know what he would spend his money on. Apparently, when Arsene Wenger arrived, I think it could have been West Antone telling me this story, that when Arsene Wenger arrived at the club in 1996... they got him a car as part of his package, right? So it was a Mercedes, at the time, top-of-the-line Mercedes. And about 4 years ago, they said to him, Arsene, you know, should really change that car. You know, it's a bit battered looking now. You've been driving it for 15 years. And he was like, oh, really? Okay. All right, then. You know, So he's not like splashing his money on all kinds. But that, I think that's the thing, that all managers take on these endorsements or speaking engagements. Did you see Ivan Gazidis did a speaking engagement? He was at the Vatican.
Really?
Yes. He did a speaking engagement at the Vatican. I'm just going to see if I can find the story here. Yeah, there was a conference, Sport at the Service of Humanity, in Vatican City. It was all about sport and faith. And he said a couple of things about Arsene Wenger, which weren't particularly interesting one way or the other. But there you go. There's Ivan Gazidis doing speaking stuff at the Vatican.
That's a hey.
That's a what?
A hell of a gig, I said. Sorry.
Sorry, no, you just cut out there very slightly, so.
Okay.
Hell of a gig, I see what you did there, the Vatican,
Indeed. But, Gazidis at the Vatican. Maybe that's where he's headed after Arsenal, when he's finished with us.
Yeah.
After chief exec is running for Pope.
Yeah, it's like the Pope coming to Ireland. Young people of Arsenal, I love you. Like the Pope did in 1970. Oh, yeah, God. Anyway, what else has been going on? Let's see.
I really don't know. Piqué's retired from international duty because of his shirt sleeves.
What?
I've just seen this story. Gerard Piqué will retire from international football after the 2018 World Cup following a controversy surrounding his shirt sleeves.
He's obviously been hanging out with Flamini. I think that must be what it is.
During Flamini's time as a free agent, he was wielding his influence on Gerard Piqué.
But what did he do? Like have a Catalan flag on his shirt sleeve or something?
I think it's something like he refuses. They're supposed to have the Spanish flag on the trim of the sleeve, and I think it's something like he refuses. He's a quote from Piqué: "I have tried everything, but I can't bear more." I don't know if he means the shirt is uncomfortable. He says, "Today's issue of the sleeves is the straw that breaks the camel." Now, I must point out, when I rode a camel, I was very careful to bring no straws with me whatsoever. I've heard about the damage it can do to a camel. They say you can put whatever you want on a camel. You bring it, for some reason, if you bring a straw on there, All hell can break loose.
Listen, you can fuck it here. Take this anvil.
Exactly. For God's sake.
No straws.
For God's sake, don't bring a straw.
Wow, that's a weird story, isn't it?
Yeah. So there you go. I think, yeah, it's something to do with his kind of his support for Catalan independence and what have you.
Right.
But shirt sleeves, controversial, eh?
Yeah, I mean, look, those are the key issues that football and society faces. I assume, and I don't want to go there, but I imagine that when you stayed up last night with your popcorn watching this great political debate, this masterclass in intelligence and political rhetoric, wit, repartee, that they, both candidates, addressed the issue of football shirt sleeves and how it might affect the world going forward.
Because of the time difference, I only watched the first half of the debate, but I imagine the second half was entirely consumed with that particular subject.
Yeah, yeah.
If I check, you know, BBC News, it will all be about...
All right, well, we'll do that. We'll do that after. Did you see, Riyad Mahrez has been talking. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that, actually.
Well,
let's say what he said first. So he said that Arsenal did try to buy him this summer.
He said, "There was contact with Arsenal, but Leicester wanted to keep me and I was pretty expensive." And he said, "I did not want to create a conflict when the offer came in." So that seems to suggest that, A, there was contact with Arsenal and that an offer came in. So he didn't want to agitate for a move away from the club. And now he says, "Personally, I think it's a good thing I stayed put. Now it's up to me to prove myself again." So there you go.
Well, I mean, you know, there was a lot of smoke, wasn't there, around that particular transfer?
There was that one journalist, wasn't there, who was going bananas tweeting, it's happening, Arsenal have offered 30 million. Two minutes later, he's tweeting, they've gone to 32 million, then 40 million. You know, he went crazy that day, that guy.
Yeah, yeah. And it didn't come to pass.
And where is he now? Nobody knows. He's probably off riding a camel somewhere.
Exactly. What was his name? Abdul. No, I, he, I'd love for Riyad Mahrez to come to Arsenal still. Do you know what? I even at the start of this season, I think he's been very good. And, yeah, I'm crossing my fingers that Leicester underwhelms sufficiently this season and we can swoop them at a knockdown fee in the summer.
That seems okay. I'd have him too, yeah, for sure.
Lovely.
For sure. Really nice. All right, well, look, I think we might leave part one there and come back with part two and some questions and all that kind of stuff after this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two, the part of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. I almost forgot what our Twitter things were.
I know, but you know, you got it right in the end, and that's what counts.
Yeah, just about. Just about.
I could feel your hesitation as you forgot who you were and who I was.
There was something I was going to ask you at the start of this part of the show. It was probably, if you know how, if I can speak English or not, but I've completely and utterly forgotten what it was. So let's not worry about it.
Maybe it'll come to you later.
Maybe it will. Maybe it will. Probably about 3:30 this afternoon.
Yeah.
When you're gone.
Yeah.
But
just shout it into the void.
Yeah, I will. I will. I will. All right. Well, look, we'll get on with questions. And one of the stories we didn't touch on in the first part of the show was the Times ran a story last week about Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez and how both of them were looking for around £250,000 per week to sign new contracts with Arsenal. The initial offers of around 180 grand a week are now seen as unacceptable, partly because of the devaluation of the British pound, and these guys want to, you know, deal in euros and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. But also because they're looking around at other clubs and seeing how much players are being paid and saying, well, you know, we're very high-profile players in the Premier League. We want what the well, the big boys are getting, and they're in very strong positions. So the question comes in from Luke London at Luke London _, and he says, what would be the knock-on effect of Alexis and Ozil not signing new contracts? Should we meet their £250,000 a week wage demands? I think there was another one as well. Jez Cook at Jez Gunnar Cook asks, should Arsenal break the wage structure to keep Sanchez and Ozil at the club and continue to add players of that caliber?
Well, yes, I suppose they should. but there's going to be big consequences for it. I mean, even if it was 180 grand rather than 250, it opened up a gap over the other big earners at the club, and that gap will gradually get filled in. If you put Alexis and Ozil on, let's say they even meet at, I don't know, 200 grand a week, a player who's on 130, that suddenly sees 200 is going to look for an increase. That's just the way of the world, isn't it? It's the way football works. It's kind of, it's not like the MLS where you have like a designated player where it's fine for someone else to be on a dramatically higher salary than somebody else. All the salaries are relative at any one club.
Mm.
So I think Arsenal have little choice, unfortunately. I think that is kind of the way it's been going for some time, ever since in the Premier League. I think Wayne Rooney sort of signed the first, you know, a week contract, and I think, you know, it's inevitable that we will have to follow suit. I don't really see a way around it. If you want to, it's not just if you want to keep those kind of players, it's if you want to attract those kind of players in future.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing about it is that the two players are in fantastic position to negotiate. I mean, they, you know, they can make a very good case. Look at what the top players in the Premier League are earning at other clubs. And they are among, what, in the top 5-10 players in the Premier League, both of them, for sure, right? So, from a market forces point of view, they make a very good point, but also they're now heading towards the final year of their contract. And again, that strengthens their hand when it comes to negotiating. It's like, well, you know, if you don't give us what we want, we can just hang on, leave on a free. Or the club are forced into selling them with 12 months left on their contract because they don't want to take such a big financial hit, you know? Now, I think we're better placed to deal with those sort of things at this moment in time. Obviously, the financial situation at the club is much better than it used to be. And I think we can afford to pay them, probably we can afford to pay them 250 grand a week each. I would imagine, like you say, it will probably, they'll meet in the middle somewhere. But look, the knock-on effects are obvious that when the highest wage at the club increases, people understand that they're not going to get that, but they want not quite parity, but they want to be, they don't want to be left way, way behind. So if you've got somebody like Alex Iwobi, for example, I know he's only a young player making his breakthrough, and he still has a long way to go. But if he's on 30 grand a week and he's playing every week alongside guys who are on 200 grand a week, you know, it does create a bit of a disparity there. So,
well, I think Arsene Wenger's on record as saying he doesn't particularly like I think I seem to remember him saying that a few years ago, because actually when Alex Ferguson was at Manchester United, there were times when his wage budget was kind of stretched in a fashion like that. So you'd have a massive star like a Rooney on loads of money, but maybe a homegrown player like a Danny Welbeck didn't necessarily earn all that much. At Arsenal, I think generally Wenger talks about having an egalitarian squad, you know, where he wants greater similarity across the board. Mm. So when you have that philosophy, it's going to cost you, right?
Yeah. I mean, he did try that, I think, you know, with the whole Project Youth thing. There seemed to be that sort of idea, you know, and I get that to a certain extent, but, you know, you've got to accept the fact that certain players are better, are more important to the team, they contribute more, and their status is such that you have to work to keep them. And the way that you can do that is, you know, is by pretty much giving them what they want. And players have the power these days. I think that they have done for quite a while. But, you know, they really dictate how much they're going to get paid. Because when it comes right down to it, if they don't get what they want at Arsenal, they can go somewhere else and get it. That's the key thing. And I just don't think Arsenal can. They just can't lose either of those players. I know we've spoken about their contracts before and how important they are, but you just can't. I mean, attracting them is one thing, but you've got to show that you can keep them, and then you've got to keep bringing in players of that caliber as well. You've got to try anyway, because you know, that's how you improve your squad and how you make your team more competitive. So, or it's one of the ways that you do that anyway. They're going to have to pretty much bend or find some common ground, negotiate well. I'm sure old Dick will be working hard there. And if they can find an acceptable wage for both of them, then they've got to do it. There's just no other way, though.
I mean, I think it's at least an improvement in situations in the past where we've had, I don't know, the likes of Theo Walcott asking to be the highest paid player at the club at a time when he wasn't necessarily performing to that level. Mm. These guys are, you know, the clear stars in this side, aren't they? I mean, they're the marquee players, really. Mm. And so reflecting that in their salary, there is a certain logic to that. And and ultimately, they know they could at least match that kind of sum elsewhere if they decided to move.
Yep. So there we go. Just do it.
Yeah, do it, please. Mm. That would be lovely. Let's have another question. So, okay, well, we've got a game coming up this weekend. Mark Starling, at Mark Starling 5, on Twitter asks, are Aaron Lee and Olivier Giroud now bench players? Would putting one back in disrupt the pace and fluidity of this team?
Are they bench players? Well, I don't think Ramsey's going to be back. Maybe he will. I'm not 100% sure. Giroud should be back. Do they come straight back into the team? No. I don't think they do. I know we had another question here from Atwood10, who asked, given our good form, would you bring Ramsey straight back into the starting 11 when fit, and do you think Arsene Wenger will? I know we've touched on that before, and I think Arsene Wenger will bring Aaron Ramsey back, but I don't think it's... depends on how he looks at this game again at the weekend and how internationals affect some of the players and whether that's going to affect his team selection in any way. But are Ramsey and Giroud bench players at the moment? Yeah, if they're, you know, if they're just coming back from injuries, they're going to have to buy their time, start on the bench. Things are working pretty well. And I think it's one of the things, particularly in midfield, we were always going, you know, when everyone is fit, he's got such a lot to choose from. There's so many options in there that it's going to be an actual challenge to give everybody the football that, A, they want, and, B, he wants them to have. But I think with Ramsey in particular, I think he has a special connection with Ramsey in a way. I think he really wants Ramsey to be part of his team. But at the moment, it's hard to see exactly where he would fit in. Maybe playing with Xhaka. I think we spoke before about that perhaps being the long-term plan. But obviously, Cazorla is playing extremely well. Coquelin is playing well. Xhaka has come in and done well. Elneny's there, who always comes in and does well when he plays or comes on as a substitute. So the unfortunate consequence of being out injured is that teams can, I won't say evolve or move past you, but they can get themselves into a run of form, which makes it very difficult for you to get back into the team. So I think they're going to have to bide their time. I think with Giroud in particular, I think he's probably a little more on the out than Ramsey is. You know, the team style is such with Alexis up front that we can't play that way with Giroud in the team. But you could make a case that Ramsey still is at an age where he could establish himself in the midfield. But it's how and when Arsene Wenger decides to do that. That's the big question.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think, you know, Ramsey could integrate in the kind of, you know, Mark's original question said, would bringing Ramsey or Giroud disrupt the pace and fluidity of the... I think bringing Giroud in might do that, but I can see a few areas where you could introduce Ramsey and maintain, you know, those qualities in the 11. So the question is where, as you say. I think Cazorla's continued brilliance is probably an irritation to Aaron Ramsey and even Jack Wilshere because... You know, fundamentally, he's the player stopping them taking up a central berth, but he's, at the moment, just too good to dispense with.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so look, it's a challenge.
Complain.
Yeah, it's a challenge, isn't it, for him? All right, here's one from Mikey Arsenal, at AFC Mikey, who says, as it's his birthday, what's your favourite Tony Adams moment? Tony Adams is 50 today.
Ooh, I would say 50. Happy 50th, Tony. It's got to be...
We know you're listening. Thanks.
Yeah. it's got to be, would you believe it? 1998, the fourth in the final day. Was it the final day? It was certainly the win over Everton.
It wasn't the final day, no. I think there were two games maybe left to play.
Right.
And Everton at that point, if I remember correctly, Everton were like fighting for their Premier League survival.
Right.
I'm just going to go back and have a look here. What do I have to do? 97, 98. So I think there were two games still to go, and we might have lost them. Yeah, we did. So we beat Everton 4-0, sealed the title, then went to Anfield and got beaten 4-0 ourselves.
Wow.
Arsenal team that went to Anfield that day was Manninger, Dixon, Bold, Upson, Grimondi, Platt, Parler, Stephen Hughes, Luis Boa Morte, Ian Wright and Christopher Ray. So, and we lost the final game of that Premier League season as well. We lost 1-0 to Aston Villa, who had Hugo Ehiog sent off after 24 minutes. Arsenal players had obviously been enjoying their title win and were concentrated then for the FA Cup final at the end of that year. At the end of that season, which they won, of course, to seal the double. So there you go.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's got, for me, that goal was, you know, a great moment. Just Steve Bold's pass, wasn't it, over the top?
Yeah.
And if I remember rightly, the back four that we finished that game with, because Bold came on, I believe, as a sub, and we finished with Dixon, Adams, Bold, Winterburn, who were the same back four who played at Anfield in 89.
Right.
And then they were reunited in 98. Incredible to clinch the title again.
98-89. Very cool. Very cool.
So that's probably my top Tony Adams memory. But have you got anything else that springs to mind from earlier in his career?
There was a really brilliant goal against Spurs, I remember.
Mm. I don't remember it.
You don't remember it?
Was it? What was it? A header?
No. Did he? I think he scored in one of the semi-finals against Spurs. I can't remember. My brain is melted. But there was a great goal at Highbury, I think, where he might have chested it down or something. I can't remember. I just remember
dropping Steve Morrow in 1993.
That was a good one, all right.
That was an unfortunate moment.
Yeah, what else? I mean, yeah, it's hard to remember. God, I can barely remember what I did yesterday, let alone, I guess we're going to forget a load of stuff. What else? There was that great one where David Ellery, the referee, was mic'd up. I don't know if you remember this, but the referee, David Ellery, was mic'd up and Arsenal were playing, I don't know, Millwall or something like that. And Tony Adams thought he scored a goal and David Ellery didn't give it. And Tony Adams shrieked at him, called him a fucking cheat, not realising that he was the referee was mic'd up and David Ellery being a schoolmaster. But there's a great bit where, there's a little clip of it on YouTube, I'm going to play it here, where he's trying to convince the referee that the ball had crossed the line. So this is it, hang on.
Go away!
That is over the line!
That's great.
Yeah. But look, there must be, you know, there must be loads. Obviously, 89 as well.
Of course.
91 when we won the league in 1991 as well. And that was very
so
nearly.
Young.
Yeah, that was very nearly an unbeaten season. People forget how close we came that season in 1991. Only lost once, and that was to Chelsea.
Was that at what point in the season was that? Was that towards the end or? Don't know.
I can't remember actually. I think it was. I'm gonna have to look it up here.
Was it like? Was it talked about as a possibility, or was it like they lost the first game, so it was never going to happen? Do you know what I mean?
No, I don't remember it being talked about. But it was okay. We lost to Chelsea in February, so it was 2-1 at the old Stamford Bridge. Cars parked all around it, but yeah, only lost one game in the Premier or in the First Division. Was it the First Division or the Premier League then? I can't remember. I think it probably would have been First Division. Premier League,
first division.
What, kicked in 92, something like that?
1993, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a strange one, isn't it? Because a guy who had such a connection with the club and had such a great career with Arsenal, that the relationship between him and Arsenal seems a bit odd or strained.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally a statue of the man outside the stadium.
Exactly, and you know he has had those things, but wasn't there the final day at Highbury? He didn't turn up. Mm. Like all the ex players were there, pretty much everybody who'd ever played at Highbury was there, and Tony Adams decided to, you know, he didn't want to for whatever reason, and that's fine. But Yeah, it seems like an odd relationship at the moment. Now, whether that's to do with Arsenal or whether it's to do maybe his relationship with Arsene Wenger isn't great, I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, he had some incredible achievements. Isn't he the only man to lift the league title in three separate decades? So he did it in 89, he did it in 91, 98 as well, and also then in 2002. So I think he's the only man to ever do that. So that's
pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you look at his career record, he played from Arsenal between 1983 and 2002.
Mm.
It's just extraordinary, really. And I think part of the problem maybe in his retirement is that his coaching career has not quite gone to plan, has it? So, maybe he envisaged taking up a position with Arsenal at some stage, but he's not really. He's done some work with the kids, of course, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's one of the classic examples of a great player who doesn't necessarily become a great manager.
Yeah.
You know? And obviously, ideally, when you have a club legend, if they could come over and take over as manager, then, you know, it's brilliant. But in practice, it rarely happens. But anyway, happy 50th birthday, Tony Adams.
Speaking of club legends and what becomes of them in retirement, we had a question from Gunnar Outpost, who asks, thoughts on Perez talking about being a sporting director at the club, please?
So thoughts on Robert Pires talking about being a sporting director.
Did you see these quotes? I did see the quote.
Yeah, he said, I've spoken. He says, I want to become like a football director. And Arsene Wenger knows this. I mean, does it sound like it's a role that would have to be invented? Because
we don't
have one of those, do we?
It doesn't exist currently.
Mm.
One also wonders if it's I mean, it's not inconceivable, I suppose, that if Arsene was going to continue at the club, then maybe bringing in a sporting director who could work alongside him, who could kind of manage the train when Arsene eventually does move on, isn't the worst idea. And maybe I've always thought in the past that, you know, it would make no sense to have someone who's kind of Wenger superior brought in by the manager. But if the idea is that Arsene knows himself, he doesn't want to stay around once he retires, you know, he doesn't want to be part of the board, maybe introducing someone now who could work with him and, you know, learn from him and then take some of that on when Arsene does leave. I don't know, there might be a certain logic to
that. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we've discussed before is, okay, when the time comes, when Arsene Wenger leaves the club, we're going to have in place structures that are present at most modern football clubs, right? So you don't have this one guy who controls everything, like the old classic football manager. He's the manager of the club. He manages, as Arsene Wenger does, pretty much everything. What you would have is probably a head coach, and that's what comes in. And then you need, let's say, a football director or a sporting director who might then be in charge of the transfers. So the new coach comes in and says, I want this, 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 and this player, and he doesn't involve himself in that. And quite often they don't want to get involved in that side of things, in the transfer side of things. Mm-hmm. So you need somebody there. So, I mean, to have someone like Robert Pires, who understands Arsenal, has a great connection with Arsenal, is a club legend, seems like an intelligent, popular guy. People always like Robert Pires. Would he have the business acumen or the, you know, financial acumen to do the job? I don't know. I mean, we don't really know from that point of view. But what we do know is that he's still hugely enthusiastic about football and about Arsenal. I mean, he's training every day. He trains every day. Whether that's necessarily a good thing or not, I don't know. But, you know, it must be great for some of the young players to see someone like Robert Pires around. And if he can offer some advice and what have you on the training ground, then all well and good. But yeah, I think we do have to at some point move towards a more modern structure. And if Robert Pires is a guy who wants to do that job and is good enough to do that job, then yeah, why the hell not? It would be brilliant to see him. I mean, what do you think the conversations are like between him and Arsene Wenger? Is he saying, look, give me a job. I want to do this job.
Maybe. I mean, you know, these quotes, we don't know the tone in which they were said. It might be a slightly tongue-in-cheek thing of, you know, I'm asking Austin for a nice, cushy job. But I think what's interesting to me is that I've always thought Austin will need a director of football or a sporting director, as Pierce says, when Austin goes. To replace, you know, as you say, not one man can necessarily do all the things he currently does in a modern structure. What I've never considered before, I've always thought he would never accept having someone brought in to work with him while he was still in charge. If it was somebody like Pires, who he's got a great relationship with,
who's not angling for his job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Who's there almost to kind of, you know, pick up pieces from him. Then maybe he would contemplate something like that. I mean, whether Pires is the right guy, we don't really know enough about him off the pitch. I think I know that he didn't, for long periods of his career, didn't actually have an agent. He used to just deal with a lawyer to manage a lot of his football affairs. So
right.
Maybe that gave him a kind of a working knowledge of contracts and things like that that might have been useful, that might prove useful to him. But that'd be speculation, really. But he's certainly someone who would make a great ambassador for the club. I think he already performs in that role. But whether or not he's got the acumen to flourish like that,
right?
We don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It would be great. I think it would be great. I think anything involving Robert Pires is pretty great.
I suspected you might think that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think Abdul has got a camel called Robert Pires?
Probably. I suspect, you know, he's got Sebastian, Robert. And then I don't know who else. Gilles is probably the other one.
Mikhail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The really rubbish camel.
Yeah, Mikhail at the back.
Yeah.
Shuffling along.
Sylvester the camel.
Bless him.
Yeah. All right. This is one from Rich at Cazorla Rue, who wants to know, how long will it take for Bob Bradley to get fired from his goddamn soccer football club team? seeing as we're facing Swansea on Saturday, they've just appointed Bob Bradley, former US men's national team coach, who's been around the block quite a bit. He's their new manager. Have you seen the bit of furore that went on around this involving Ryan Giggs?
Oh, a little bit. I saw that excellent piece on Football 365 dissecting Robbie Savage's column about the appointment of Bob Bradley. And to be honest, off the back, and I recommend that if you can see, but off the back of that, I kind of hope, not this weekend, obviously, but I hope Bob Bradley succeeds, because it's sort of one in the eye, isn't it, for that kind of slightly hackneyed, old-fashioned view of football, where Giggs should have walked into this job just because he's Ryan Giggs, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, he did an underwhelming interview. Apparently, one of the questions was, like, you know, how do you envisage getting Swansea out of this difficult period that they're going through? What should the players do to turn results around? And his answer was, like, work harder and run more.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it is that classic thing, isn't it? That just because he's been a great player, talking about that, you know, the idea that a great player become a great manager. I mean, what did he do during his time as assistant manager of Manchester United? Like, nothing.
Sometimes he stood up.
Sometimes he stood up, yeah. But that was almost the only time he ever stood up was when stuff was going badly. And he wanted to show the Old Trafford crowd or the travelling fans, look, there's a bit of distance between me and Louis van Gaal here. Van Gaal is of the opinion that, look, shouting and screaming from the sideline really doesn't make a huge amount of difference. You know, fans like to see that bit of passion on the sideline, but his philosophy is, well, look, you know, they know what they're supposed to be doing. I can't communicate effectively with any of them when there's like 70,000 people shouting and singing. They can't hear me anyway. So I'm going to sit here and like put my trust in the players, you know. But Giggs, when things were going badly, would stand up and, you know, wave his arms about a bit. So people would think, hey, you know, he's not necessarily wedded to the Van Gaal thing. But the idea that, you know, that somehow qualifies him for a job as a Premier League manager. I mean, how the fuck did Tim Sherwood ever get a job? Seriously. How does it... I mean, You're the Tim Sherwood expert.
Hardly. I've just seen that Chris Sutton of the BBC. Crisps Sutton has waded in saying, is Bob Bradley better qualified than Ryan Giggs to get this job? I don't think so. Now, when Chris Sutton says something, I think you can be pretty sure that the opposite of it is usually true.
Yeah.
He's savage-esque in some of his opinions. So, the idiots are conspiring on the side of Ryan Giggs. Mm. So I kind of wish Bob Bradley well. But as I say, after this week.
Yeah, not this weekend.
No. I hope he gets off to a dreadful start.
Yes. And I hope people like Chris Sutton and Robbie Savage go,
yeah, and let them have it for 1 week.
Yeah, exactly. They think they're somehow smart and then life will... Well, I mean, we all know otherwise. Didn't Chris Sutton score a fucking really annoying goal against us? Was it in the first season that Arsene Wenger took over? We might have been playing Blackburn really late in the season, and Chris Sutton scored a goal like we were... They were supposed to give us the ball back because there was an injury, and he played on and scored a goal. Maybe I'm wrong here. I don't know. But it cost us like Champions League football. I'm remembering wrong. Maybe it was 96, 97. Let me have a look here.
He was quite an irritating footballer generally, Chris Sutton.
He was a cunt.
Yeah. That's another way of putting it. And he signed for Chelsea. What more proof could he need?
He might have crossed the ball for a late goal that Gary Flitcroft scored.
Oh.
And I think that season we finished level on points with Newcastle.
Right.
But Newcastle had better goal difference, and at that time there were only two teams went into the Champions League, and we missed out. So, fuck you, Chris Sutton, basically.
Thanks for nothing, Chris Sutton.
Fucking wanker.
Yeah, I am. All right. I hate him.
Yeah. Okay, we've got one final question here. I can't remember who it's from, because it was sort of like an imagey thing that I have to open up here.
Okay.
God damn it! I've got to find it.
We're on tentacles that will await this question.
Oh, it comes from Matthew Howarth at Flat World's Edge.
Right,
and he says, would you rather? You've got to choose between these things.
Oh, God.
The first thing is a weekly telephone call with Arsene Wenger, during which he will always speak the truth as he sees it. So I guess you could ask him anything about anything to do with Arsenal, things past, present, future, and he would have to tell you the truth. Or Jose Mourinho cursed so that all he may ever say publicly or privately is Filippo Inzaghi, in an eerily perfect imitation of Billy Connolly's trademark accent. Which one do you choose?
What would that sound like? Can you tell?
What would that sound like?
Billy Connolly.
Filippo Inzaghi!
Filippo Inzaghi!
Filippo Inzaghi!
Filippo Inzaghi!
Filippo Inzaghi!
Inzaghi!
Inzaghi Filippo!
Well, as irritating as that would swiftly become, I'm not sure how debilitating it... I mean, it is pretty debilitating, isn't it? You can say that ever.
Yeah, so you're like, there's a game over. Jose, your team didn't perform very well out there today. What's your thoughts on the game?
Filippo Inzaghi!
Filippo Inzaghi! Filippo Inzaghi!
I mean, I would enjoy that.
Yeah.
Is it beneficial to know what Arsene Wenger's thinking? I like the mystery.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like the mystery.
Yeah. I like to think that he knows stuff and we don't necessarily... Like, everyone talks about, oh, it'll be amazing when Arsene Wenger writes a book. I'm not sure he ever will.
Yeah.
I'd really like him to, because there's so many things that, you know, he could expand on and give his insight into over the course of his Arsenal career. But I'm not convinced that he ever will write a book. But having Mourinho cursed like that, because it would be even at home, wouldn't it? You're like, Jose, what would you like for tea? Filippo Inzaghi. I don't know why Jose Mourinho's married to a Scottish woman either.
His wife's also Scottish.
She is cursed with having to speak in a Scottish accent as well.
Yeah.
She's a Portuguese lady.
Look, I think it's got to be that one. I think, you know, where would be the joy in Arsene Wenger's little cheeky smiles when asked about transfer questions if you knew what he meant? You know, let us have a bit of speculation, a bit of uncertainty. Have Jose Mourinho only being able to say Filippo Inzaghi for the rest of his days.
I think that works for me as well. I mean, I'd love the Arsene thing, but just to have Mourinho, I mean, it would drive you mad, wouldn't it? Like, he'd even going to the doctor and he's very sick.
Trying to explain his symptoms.
Filippo Inzaghi!
Well, that's all very well, Mr. Mourinho. I mean, he was a terrific goal poacher, but I cannot help you unless you explain to me what's wrong with you. So, once again, do you have any knowledge of why it is you're bleeding in this way?
Filippo Inzaghi?
Okay, you're wasting my time.
Get out!
Yeah.
All right, well, look, we made our choice there. Let's hope that comes true somehow.
I think it will.
That would be fantastic. All right, well, look, we will have an Arsecast on Friday as we look ahead to the Swansea game. James and I will be back on next Monday to look back at all that. Is there midweek action next week as well?
I think we might have Ludogorets, is it, in the Champions
League? Right, some Champions League action. So it's all kicking off again. Thank you for bearing with us during this Interlol Arsecast Extra. We'll have another one next Monday, as I said. So until then, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Filippo Inzaghi!
There's a voice that keeps on calling me. Down the road, that's where I'll always be. Every stop I make a new friend. Can't stay for long, just turn around and I'm gone again. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, we'll travel like that's old style. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.